Hello there. I'm Rowan Williams.
I'm Baz McAllister.
And welcome to a special emergency edition of the Force Material podcast. We had different plans for this week. Originally, I think we mentioned last week we were going to record with Kelly Knox. So apologies to anyone who was tuning in just to hear Kelly. We had some scheduling problems that on our end that couldn't be helped, but Kelly was totally cool about it, and hopefully we'll have her back for a later episode. But we had to put up something for this episode of The Mandalorian that just aired because, oh my God, Baz, that was everything.
Like, we're going to sound more subdued than we have any right to be right now, because I've literally just finished watching it. But I have a sleeping child and a wife attempting to get to sleep quite close to me, and I know you probably have the same situation, kind of huddled in the corner of your house,
pretty much. And I'm just on my MacBook. I don't have, like, I'm literally just using my MacBook microphone. I don't have an actual microphone or anything set up here. So anyway, I don't think anyone's that fast. People just want to nerd out about The Mandalorian Chapter 13, The Jedi. In Dave Filoni we trust, you know?
Yeah, in Filoni we trust.
Dave came through. You know, look, guys, I should say in the outset, we're going to be talking spoilers from the get-go. That said, don't ever listen to these recap episodes without watching the episode first.
Like, if you've got Disney Plus, you've got it on your phone. If you're listening to this on your phone before you watch the episode in Disney Plus, well, we love you, but you're stupid.
I mean, that's amazing, but yeah. Now, this episode, I mean, look, every director has brought their A game to this series so far, but this was on another level. Dave was tapping directly into the Force this episode. His vision for this episode, you know, I was just talking to someone who called it dreamlike, and that's 100% right. It's like it sprang fully formed from a dream. And the whole episode just had this perfect mix of, like, samurai and Western aesthetics that we kind of want from Star Wars, with a bit of, wuxia action thrown in too. I saw someone, I can't remember who it was, but I saw someone just kind of snarkily post before, like, oh, do you think Dave Filoni likes samurai movies? And I'm like, yeah, you know who else does? And most people who like Star Wars, most probably. So I'm extremely happy with that.
Yeah, I caught, like, a healthy dollop of Lord of the Rings style visuals in there as well. You know, like the mystic in the forest with the armored warrior, you know, those kinds of things, and that all kind of comes through too. And you can tell Dave loves his fantasy stuff, you know, because he's into the wolves and things like that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, in those opening minutes, it's like, oh my God, am I watching, like, Roman Polanski's Macbeth? Like, what is happening here? Like, with the, you know, it was so atmospheric. We should say as well, with those fantasy references, did you catch Mirai in this episode?
Mirai,
the convor, the bird that tends to be around when Ahsoka's around.
I didn't catch it.
If I'm right, I could be wrong, I think it appears just before Ahsoka gets the jump on Mando when he's walking through the woods.
Yeah, awesome. I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that involves a lot of kind of running around, ambushing people, trying to get the drop on them, you know, and then fading back into the woods. Well, the way I play it anyway. And I find myself wishing for, like, the Jedi Fallen Order was good, but I want a Star Wars game where you can do this kind of stuff, like in an open world and just, you know, go anywhere, go to other worlds, whatever, do anything you want, really, without being, I guess, railroaded as much as you were in Fallen Order. I just, that's the dream for me, like, just to play this episode as a game, you know?
That'd be great. Yeah, exactly. Baz, is it going too far to say that this one episode is the best thing Lucasfilm has released in the Disney era?
No, I don't think it is, the way I feel right now. Like, I've genuinely not been this excited to watch a new Star Wars product of any kind probably since Last Jedi. So you know, years, I mean, you know, like I can't remember getting this hyped for, say, Solo, even though Solo was amazing.
Mm.
And certainly not for Rise of Skywalker, really. So it's kind of, yeah, it's unbelievable that we've just seen what we've seen.
Mm. Yeah, and we're two people who have quite lacked, I would say, the vast majority of the stuff
yeah. You know,
that we've talked about over the course of the pod that's come out. But there's some stuff that for me is just sort of on you know, that top tier, and it's like, you know, for me it's like, and it's going to be different for everybody. For me, it's like The Force Awakens, Twilight of the Apprentice, you know, the Clone Wars finale. And this is in that very top tier for me. The Last Jedi, if it would be just below that. Yeah. I still love it, but it's not, you know, not quite in that. And yeah, for me, this was something else.
Oh, it's amazing. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Baby Yoda has a name.
There's so much, like,
so much to unpack here.
We knew Ahsoka would be in this episode, I think it's fair to say. Like,
yeah, I mean, we directed by Filoni,
called all the rumors, the Jedi.
Yeah,
we knew he was going to find Ahsoka. I mean, it wouldn't have shocked me if they found a way to stretch that out a little further, and you know, if the name was actually a bit of a troll job, and Ahsoka didn't appear until the final episode of the season. But
yeah,
this episode has forever shattered any sort of idea of, like, you know, well, they'll save, you know, insert thing X here for the finale of the season or whatever, because so many things in this episode are things that you thought, you know, I would have thought might be saved for a finale. Like, we got Baby Yoda's name, you know, we got his, I keep calling him Baby Yoda. Of course, it's Grogu. Grogu from now on.
I love it.
Grogu. It suits him, doesn't it?
It does suit him. It's so good.
So we got Grogu's name. We got Grogu's backstory. I think that name as well. I was like, why do I love this so much? And I feel like maybe it reminds me a little bit of the kid in Lone Wolf and Cub. I mean, I don't know if that's deliberate, but yeah. That's
deliberate. Yeah. It also has the same kind of, you know, same cadence as Yoda. It's got like a vowel rhyme with Yoda. Grogu, yeah. Yoda. Yeah, I like
it. Yeah, definitely. Now, his backstory in this, we find out that, you know, I think we've sort of assumed, or, well, I guess we just didn't know what his deal was. But so it turns out he's, you know, he was at the Jedi Temple. He was on Coruscant. But someone whisked him away from the temple before Anakin killed all the younglings. Look, let's just jump straight into wild speculation, Baz.
Yeah.
Who saved Baby Grogu?
Wow. Who do we know that got out of the temple? Can I throw one name at you
that might be controversial?
Go on.
Anakin Skywalker.
Ah.
Let's say maybe it was, you know, he did one last good thing, you know, maybe baby Grogu ends up being sort of the living, you know, embodiment of the last good thing that Anakin Skywalker did, until obviously he killed the Emperor. But it's probably not that. It's probably Obi-Wan or Yoda or something. But
Jocasta Nu,
yeah,
that's my bet. Yeah,
Padme.
Yeah, maybe Anakin like realized, because there's much has been made of the fact that they were born around the same year, so maybe Anakin at the last second realized this is actually the chosen one, it wasn't me after all, and that fueled his anger even more.
maybe
we think of someone who's been languishing at university for like 8 years as an eternal student. Baby Yoda's been there, he's 50. You know, if he got to the temple when he was 4, like most younglings, he's been kicking around there for, you know, who knows how long, 30 years.
It's so wild that he's simultaneously a baby and acts like a baby, but also a longtime student of the Jedi Academy, where he was apparently taught by many masters. So I got no idea where this guy's at in terms of his development.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, I love him. I love Grogu and all his will.
He's fantastic. We're going to jump around this episode like crazy, but we might as well stick with talking about him and the bond he has with Mando, which obviously you know, is seen by Ahsoka at the end and is hinted at all the way through and proven all the way through. And again, I love the callback to the little ball of the, you know, the ball knob of the...
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
Razor Crest. There it is. Yeah. which is fantastic. So, you know, do you think that, do you think now that Mando is too far gone that he would ever give up or part from Grogu?
I think he willingly would have done it in this episode.
You think?
I think if Ahsoka had been willing to take him, and it's, I don't, you know, it's not out of any lack of love for Grogu. It's just he's trying to do the right thing by the boy. And
or is he just trying to get his batchy life back? Because like it was cool for him to jet around the galaxy doing whatever he wants and not having to look for a babysitter every 5 seconds.
It could be that.
I must admit, when he spotted the two kids and the old fella in the alleyway, I was like, oh, here we go. Babysitters. I'm quite happy to be wrong. That it was good that he managed to keep Grogu with him for pretty much the whole episode.
Yeah, he left him on the ship for that one little thing at that moment at the end. But you know, now that he knows he's been to Jedi school, maybe he's like, ah, oh, I can trust this kid to hang out on his own for a second. I definitely think he would have given up Grogu if Ahsoka had been willing to take him. And I think, you know, because we know that Ahsoka can understand Grogu, but nobody else can, essentially. And there's that moment at the very end of the episode when Ahsoka gives, like, Mando's walking away, walking up the ramp, and Grogu's looking back at Ahsoka, and Ahsoka just sort of gives him that knowing kind of nod. So to me, that's like, Grogu is like telepathically screaming at her that he doesn't want to leave the Mando. And so that's why she's saying, well, I can't take him. I can't train him, you know? So it's partly obviously because of what she says about attachment, but also just Grogu is straight up telling her, you know, I don't want to leave the Mando.
Like she, you know, she says she's seen this before. Obviously she's referring to Anakin.
Yeah.
But not so much with Padme, with his mother, I'd say. You know, it's just a kid who's too attached to a parent to really learn the ways of the Jedi properly.
Well, so, yeah, you know, I was wondering that, like, which one is she referring to? The one she saw firsthand is obviously the connection to Padme. But yeah, the more relevant, maybe, the better analogy might be the connection to Shmi.
Yeah. So Grogu has found a parent figure, I guess, later in his life, but it's. It's a proper bond. Mm. It's a proper parent-child bond, at least from his point of view.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting, though, because there's no... Did you notice, like, you know, when I started thinking about this when Ahsoka was talking about attachments and, you know, really following that kind of Jedi way. At no point in the episode did Ahsoka say, well, I'm not a Jedi. So... implying either that she just didn't think it was worth making the distinction to all the characters who called her a Jedi over the course of the episode, most of whom don't probably understand much about the Jedi Order anyway, or has she become a Jedi again in the space between when we last saw her and now?
Yeah.
Or is the whole idea of like being a Jedi, you know, essentially meaningless now that there's no Jedi Order, so why not call yourself a Jedi?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe she's taken the word back to mean something else, just to mean like a floating peacekeeper, like,
yeah,
you know, without any, yeah.
So she's definitely assuming, a Ronin.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ronin. I'm assuming that this takes place after we see her at the end of Clone Wars and before we see her at the end of Rebels. Would you?
No, I think this takes place after we see her at the end of Rebels, because the end of Rebels coincides with the end of the war. And this is like 5 years after that.
Yeah, but I don't think we know exactly when Sabine and Ahsoka have that final scene. Like, I'd have to go back and watch it again, but I think that that could take place any time after, you know, the events that Sabine is thinking about, like of Callus and Zeb going off to find that planet, and
that's true.
Hera and her kid, you know, she could be remembering all that. It might not be happening simultaneously with her standing there on the Thal. So
that's true.
I'm just thinking that Ahsoka in this episode shares a lot more of her look with end of Clone Wars than she does with the Gandalf the White sort of vibe.
That's true. And also, like, it would explain why, you know, Ezra and Sabine are nowhere to be seen if she hasn't.
Exactly, yeah. She hasn't, and she's still looking for Thrawn. So, you know, the vibe I get from the end of Rebels is she's found where Ezra and Thrawn are, and she needs to get Sabine to come and help her get them. So maybe she's still on the trail, you know?
That all makes complete sense. That, I mean, yeah, I was just kind of hung up on the whole, like, well, I'm pretty sure the end of Rebels takes place simultaneously with the end of, like, more or less simultaneously with the end of Return of the Jedi. But you're right. There's no, we don't know exactly how much time passes over the course of that montage at the end of Rebels. And yeah, like, character-wise, like, arc-wise, it would make way more sense for this to be before that moment in Rebels.
Yeah.
And for this to essentially be, but like, the end of Rebels and this basically sets up the Ahsoka spin-off show if they want to do it.
Yeah.
Which they have to.
Which they should. This.
Yeah. What did you think of Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to ask you. I thought she was fantastic. Like, the voice threw me a little bit, but the look is perfect. It's spot on. The movements, the mannerisms, the fighting style.
Yeah.
You know, everything is there. It's just not quite Ashley Eckstein's voice. And that's cool. You know, I can, you know, I'm not that attached to, I can live with that.
Yeah, I was the same. Like, it didn't bother me at all that it wasn't. I mean, you know, obviously it would have been really cool for Ashley Eckstein if she got to play Ahsoka in live action. But,
yeah, you
know, Rosario Dawson is a big deal and a great actress. And, you know, she was really good in the role, and she definitely brought, like, a, you know, a physicality to it, to the fight sequences that, you know, I don't know enough about Ashley Eckstein to know if she would have been able to do that, but you know, certainly Rosario Dawson was great in those sequences. I mean, what did you think of, again, we're jumping all over the place here because we've just seen it and we're just, you know, we're high on Star Wars life. What did you make of the kind of the battle between Ahsoka and, God, I'm blanking on the name of the villain.
So Morgan's Magistrate Morgan Eckhart, I think it was, or Ebhart, something like that. I only caught it briefly. I don't know.
Or
Ebbs.
Definitely there was a Morgan in there.
Yeah. So Morgan's the first name anyway. Yeah. So fantastic. I didn't know who that actor was who played her.
That's
And I looked it up. Yeah, Diane Lee Inosanto.
Yeah, Diana Lee Inosanto, and she's the goddaughter of Bruce Lee,
and the daughter of Bruce Lee's training partner, Daniel Inosanto, who trained, you know, lots of, he trained not only Diana herself in martial arts, but people like Brandon Lee. He's trained Denzel Washington for film roles. He's trained Anderson Silva, the MMA guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's trained a lot of people, so she's got like a pedigree.
Yeah,
and it's fantastic.
And in this episode,
she's really good.
That was Star Wars at its best when you had, you know, Inosanto taking on, you know, Ahsoka in this kind of, you know, pure like Akira Kurosawa, Lady Snowblood style battle in this like really peaceful Japanese garden, like barely any score. You know, very much like, obviously another comparison would be the end of Kill Bill, part one, which is obviously, you know, again, doing the Lady Snowblood thing, and having that happen at the same time that the Mando's having his like Sergio Leone style, you know, Western, you know, shootout with Michael Biehn on the street outside. I mean, just incredible.
It's like Filoni going, get it yet? Star Wars is a samurai western.
And it's like, I get it. Like, I get why some people might be like, oh, it's sort of too basic in terms of calling out the influences or whatever. And I'm like, whatever. Like, this is essentially like, that's the basic sort of building blocks of Star Wars DNA. And when it's done this well, what else do you need?
If anybody wants to call Dave Filoni basic, they got to come through me. Yeah,
I mean, like, did you notice the incredible? Like, you could look at the best samurai movies and the best westerns, and not the hotels. and you know, like, it's not like it didn't sort of feel like a pale imitation of those genres. Like, it felt as exciting as watching some of the best stuff in those genres.
It really did. I sort of, whenever people are fighting with lightsabers and non-lightsaber weapons that can deflect lightsabers, I always sort of think to myself, why don't you just run your lightsaber up the shaft and take the person's fingers off? So I got a little bit of that. I couldn't completely divest myself from that in this battle, but it was still a great battle and I loved watching it.
Yes, but at least if they're fighting someone who's not using a lightsaber, I mean, yes, okay, it adds that element to it, but it takes away the element of why don't they just use the Force to switch off the other person's lightsaber?
Yeah. Why so, didn't she rip the spear out of her hand?
Yeah. Well, there is that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, it was still cool. And then there's honor. There's honor among Jedi and their enemies.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I kept sort of half expecting Mando's bolts to bounce off the HK assassin droids as well.
Yeah.
But, you know,
how cool were the HK droids? Like, brilliant. It's just even like the 12th coolest thing in this episode would still be like a highlight of most other episodes of the show. Like, it was amazing.
And that kind of led me to think, you know, the way that we just saw Moff Gideon building his army of dark troopers or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
What if they're made of Beskar?
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. That would be good. I'd love to see that. Not going to be easy enough to take down, are they? If they are. So that'd be fun.
Yeah.
But back to this episode. The production design of that whole fight was incredible. Like, did you notice the little, the entrance gate to the compound was the same as the one at Nima Outpost on Jakku, which was originally going to be Jabba the Hutt's palace entrance gate? You know, that weird Japanese style. Yeah, it's
such
style.
A classic, like, Star Wars, but also, like, Japanese style.
Yeah,
design. So good. Just that moment where she first sort of walks into that, you know, that kind of courtyard area, and the world is just a mess outside that door, and then she goes through the door and it's, you know, beautiful, peaceful. Just the corruption of this magistrate who's living the high life while all her people are like suffering outside. You know, just such great like visual storytelling.
Even just the fighting style we see from Ahsoka all the way through this episode of switching on her sabers to attack, then switching them off and melding into the shadows. I love that. Mm. Love it so much. And, you know, I get why you wouldn't see stand-up Jedi doing that in the prequel trilogy, because it's not the way Jedi are taught to fight. They're very much out in the open and deflecting and all that. But this is a Jedi adapting to this new guerrilla style of warfare. And it's great to see.
And, you know, she's won on however many of these soldiers and droids and whatever there are. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love the look of those soldiers as well, with the like the gas mask type things. Like they were incredible.
Really cool. And did you spot 8D8 or an 8D8 style droid lumbering past in the streets of this little town?
No, I don't. No.
It was near the start, I think. Yeah.
Nice.
So, and again, another little callback. That's probably the 13th coolest thing in this episode.
just on Grogu for a second. You know, one of the other cool things with the samurai kind of influence on this episode, Baz, is, you know, we talked about Grogu. We've seen Grogu's attachment to the little metal ball from, you know, the cockpit of the Razor Crest. We've now been told in this episode that Mando has to take Grogu to, you know, the top of this Jedi mountaintop, where Grogu essentially has to decide if the life of a Jedi is for him. They're gonna do the scene from Lone Wolf and Cub where the baby has to choose between the ball and the sword, right? Like, Grogu's going to have to choose between the little ball that represents the Mandalorian, that the one that he's always playing with from the cockpit, and a lightsaber. That's what I'm thinking. That's where I'm thinking they're heading to in the last episode of this season.
Yeah. So that's the planet Tython, which we've seen once before in Dr. Aphra comic.
Yeah, right. What a random ball. I mean, I've read the Dr. Aphra comics, but I don't even remember that.
Yeah. So when Vader's trying to find the rebel base on Hoth, Aphra tells him it's on Tython instead and lures him there. And he wrecks up the place something terrible. And so does, you know, 000 as well. So so when they get there, they're going to find it in bad shape.
Baz, you predicted at the start of this season that Luke Skywalker might make an appearance. Given that, you know, he's been to see Ahsoka now, and Ahsoka's essentially given him not the brush off, but she basically the brush off.
It's very much the brush off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, she's used to her bachelorette lifestyle now too.
Exactly. You know, nobody wants to lose their hip swinging batchy lifestyles.
Yeah.
So then she tells him to go to this mountaintop and, you know, signal out to some Jedi. Who's going to answer if not Luke Skywalker?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It basically has to be Luke, right?
Yeah. Who else is out there, you know? And Tython's in the core as well, which is going to be interesting because Mando is very much a fringe dweller on the Outer Rim. So if he goes to Tython, he's going to have to travel through, I guess, New Republic territory.
Yeah, right.
Go to the core world. So we might see, it might be a long journey to get there. So there might be a few stops in the way. We might see Paul Sun Young Lee again.
Possibly.
You know, which is, it's yeah. So Tython, it's, what if Ahsoka's just doing this as a goof? Like when they get there, they're just going to find a pile of rubble and they're going to know they've been had. She was just trying to get rid of us. No, you're right. The only person I think of that's going to answer the call is either Luke or Leia, I suppose.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Well, I'm just thinking who else is out there. I mean, technically Ezra. But
he's probably
he'll be tied up in whatever's happening with this Ahsoka storyline, if that's going to be developed further.
Yeah. So if he's currently in a different galaxy with Thrawn, or a different part of the Outer Rim with Thrawn.
So that's the thing. I don't think Thrawn's in a different galaxy anymore, because it seemed like the Magistrate was reporting directly to him. It'd be difficult if he was in. You know, which maybe goes to, this is set after Rebels and Thrawn's back.
Maybe, yeah.
Running things.
And she definitely looks like she's, you know, we've been told the Magistrate has been in charge of, I guess, strip mining resources for Thrawn in the past, or for the Empire in the past.
For the Empire, yeah.
Maybe what she's doing is, you know, the deforestation of this planet is somehow an extension of that. And she's supplying someone like Thrawn now with the resources for another super weapon, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Possibly. I mean, it's wild because, like, there's so much, you know, we got no idea what's happening, but there's three episodes left in this season.
Yeah.
And we don't know anything about what's going to happen in them. I mean, we assume that he's going to go and take Yoda up to the top of the mountain and call out to the Jedi. But in terms of like all the footage from the trailers is done. That was done.
Yeah.
We saw the last of that footage last episode. So this was the first episode where we had no tease of any footage, any images going into it. It was all completely fresh.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, absolutely played out with the intensity and the reveals you would expect from a season finale. But there's three more episodes to go, so at least an hour and a half or so more Mando, but some of them will probably be longer episodes. Yeah.
Well, the whole mountaintop sounds like it could be a season closer. So we could be looking at a couple of, you know, diversions on the way, which would be awesome. And I'm, you know, just now thinking about what those could possibly be and how they might feed into other things we've seen before. If he's heading into New Republic territory, we know that Bill Burr's character and that gang are under New Republic arrest currently. So maybe there could be something involving them somehow. That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be cool. Bill Burr to come back for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think of the score in this episode? Ludwig Göransson's score.
It's always good, but it just seems that, you know, he uses the motifs really, really well and just inserts them in places where you maybe wouldn't expect to hear them. You know, just little callbacks to three or four notes, and it's all very simply done, but it's so good.
I mean, because he for the most part, the score doesn't sort of sound like your classic Star Wars score. Like, you know, the arrangements are very different to what you'd expect from Star Wars. Like, it just, you know, it's very much its own thing. It's not a John Williams-alike kind of score, you know, or a Kevin Kiner-alike score for that matter. But, yeah, as you said, I mean, that makes it even more exciting when there's those little moments that do quote the John Williams score, or in this episode, you know, so we had a little bit of Yoda's theme when Ahsoka mentioned Yoda, but, you know, the first time Yoda's been mentioned on the show, obviously.
She obviously never met Yaddle.
No, never. Yeah, exactly. Never met Yaddle. Well, that tracks because we don't see Adol past episode one.
Yeah, so that's right.
There could be a mystery there that plays into where maybe Grogu comes from.
I remember ages ago we were theorizing that Yaddle got kicked out of the Jedi Order because she was fooling around with Yoda, and Grogu was born.
It's entirely possible. Well,
and if he comes back to the temple, then maybe not. But I don't know.
Yeah, true. It seems weird they would keep him around the baby around the temple in that case, but get rid of Yaddle. But I mean, the Jedi Order are weird.
Oh, they're weird. They're weird.
Very difficult to understand anything they do. So yeah, I mean that bit of Yoda's theme was great, and then obviously you know hearing some of Kevin Kiner's Ahsoka theme, you know, in a live action Star Wars show was something else.
Yeah. Did you notice the guy playing the fellow who gets installed as the new magistrate at the end?
No. In terms of what his name was.
Yeah. So I looked up the name of the actor Wing Tao Chow, and it turns out he's not really an actor, but by the looks of things, he's this guy who's a Disney Imagineer legend, a Disney legend.
What?
Like he's 70 something, and he's designed half of the Disney hotels and resorts and cruise ships and stuff.
And it's so definitely the same guy?
Well, I mean, you know, I've got a photo of him here. But yeah, it's got to be him. And the way, you know, it lingers on Ahsoka kind of, you know, giving him the congratulating him for having the medals and everything at the end. That's kind of, it's like a nice little nod if that is the guy. But, you know, I can't see anyone else in the acting world with that name. And so I think it's got to be. And the fact that he doesn't really have many lines suggests he's not really an actor. So it's really cool to, if that is a little tribute to this Disney legend, that's kind of an awesome thing to be part of this episode too.
And speaking of legends, I mean, we've barely touched on the fact that Michael Biehn is in this episode.
Yes.
Obviously.
Fifth coolest thing.
Yeah, exactly. Not that we're ranking them exactly, but you know, so for anyone who doesn't know, like Terminator, Aliens,
this,
basically all the awesome '80s James Cameron movies. Michael Biehn,
very, very briefly, Alien 3.
Yes, yeah, very, very briefly.
Non-speaking role.
Yes. So you know, to see him in Star Wars was incredible, and that's another thing, like the Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka that was rumored. Before the season, possibly even confirmed, I can't remember, but I'd forgotten by the time we got to this episode that he was going to be in this season. So
yeah, me too. But and it was, you know, it was interesting to see him just as this completely fresh character too, because you know there were a lot of rumors about who he was going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and they even there was like a second in this where I'm like, oh, is he meant to be like you know, Valance or whatever his name is, the cyborg like bounty hunter. But no, he was clearly like a new character. He wasn't.
I think his character name is Lang.
Okay.
So which, you know, Lang is a very earth sounding, very kind of Western sounding name, I think.
Yeah.
You know, as in Western movie.
I can't get over what a perfect, and I know this is what Star Wars has always been, but just what a perfect combination of like samurai and Western. This episode was. And obviously that goes back to, you know, a movie like Yojimbo that is a samurai movie that is inspired by, you know, Westerns. So, you know, those two genres, and then obviously, you know, we've talked at length about, obviously everybody knows about all the Western movies that were inspired by samurai movies. So like, you know, those two genres have always been like connected, but I mean, that was, you know, really, really brought home in this episode.
I love Ahsoka's costume in this episode. It's something we haven't really seen. You know, it's close to things we've seen her in before, but it's a bit baggier, a bit looser, and the trousers are kind of bloused into the boots, like Darth Maul style. You know, so it kind of hides a bit more of her form, because Ahsoka, you know, used to seeing her in tighter gear. So, you know, I love the way that when she's doing acrobatics, you know, you kind of, your eye can't track what she's actually doing, and then she ends up in this amazing fighting stanza or pulls off a move at the end. It's really well done. I'd love to know how much of that is stunt work and how much is Rosario, because I'm sure she's pretty capable of stunt work. I think
we'll find out, possibly. I mean, because I mean, maybe not, but we'll definitely get a lot of behind the scenes stories soon, because Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian season 2 was set to begin dropping on Christmas Day. So I assume it'll be a one per week rollout like everything else on Disney Plus, but
It's just occurred to me that we theorized heavily that when we see Ahsoka, she might be in the company of Rex, and that might be who Tim Morrison's playing. But obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's made me think, well, hang on, we just saw Boba Fett for a second. He's got to come back this season. They can't just set that up and then not pay that off. So one of these three episodes that are coming up at the tail end has to be dealing with that situation.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I got so caught up in everything. I mean, the thing is, in this episode, the fact that you've got Ahsoka igniting her lightsaber within like the first 30 seconds of the episode is just like, it just melts your brain. And then after that, you just go with, you know, with whatever they're doing. But yeah, I'd completely forgotten about the fact that we thought we'd see Rex with
Ahsoka. Yeah.
And yeah, we didn't, sorry.
Yeah. And I was driving home from work tonight thinking, I really hope that the first thing we see is Ahsoka. And we don't just get the Mando dropping out of hyperspace again and seeing a planet. And I just hope we get right into it with Ahsoka. And yeah, that was paid off. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, the fact that Rex wasn't in this really does, I mean, it makes it pretty likely we're going to see Boba Fett, because otherwise, you know, you're not going to bring Tim Morrison back for like a, you know, a 10-second cameo at the end of one episode. Surely
you're not going to get him to shave his head for that business.
Well, exactly. So if it wasn't, you know, if he wasn't also there to play Rex, then surely they've got him doing some more Boba Fett stuff. Baz, anything else that sort of really jumped out at you in this episode?
I mean, Grogu is a cool name, but it's not sticking. I mean, Din Djarin hasn't stuck. I mean, I still call him Mando.
I think Grogu will stick. I think it's fun to say.
You think?
I've been saying Grogu a fair bit through this episode, I feel like. I mean, I've probably said Baby Yoda just as much, but you know, I think it'll definitely stick more than the child. Nobody would say the child. The only people saying the child were like pedants who were like, it's not Baby Yoda, it's the child. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like a finger wagging school mom kind of thing. Like, everyone else was just calling him Baby Yoda. And now it's like, oh, Grogu, we've got a name that's fun to say, that's accurate. I feel like, you know, put some respect on his name. Let's call him Grogu.
It's a shame there's 1,000 pieces of merchandise out there with the name The Child. including, you know, vintage collection Star Wars figures that aren't out till next year.
Yeah.
We've seen the packaging for them, and I don't think that they're going to change the packaging now at this point to say Grogu.
If you run a company that has like a licensing deal with Star Wars, scale of 1 to 10, how annoyed were you at the moment that they reveal Grogu?
Dude, it's Black Friday today. As we're recording, and I got this email. I've got like 1,000 emails from companies that I've bought online from. And I got one from Adidas, the shoe people, about, you know, they've
I like got some Mandalorian. You specified that in case there's anyone there who doesn't.
Sorry. Well, I said that because some people pronounce it weird.
Yeah, that's
some people
true.
Call it Adidas, or I don't know. I say Adidas because it was named after the guy Adi Dassler. Anyway.
There you go, kids.
I've gone off topic.
Bit of history.
Off topic. But yeah, they've got like a brand new range of Mandalorian-inspired shoes. And they've got one that you can sign up to get pre-orders of. It's not released yet, but it features the child, and it's got the child written on it.
Oh, no.
You should have waited, guys. Just wait a week and put Grogu on it.
It'll be a fun throwback to the era when we didn't know his name. I mean, Mando Mondays is happening as always next week, though. So possibly we'll see a bunch of Grogu branded merchandise released on Mando Monday, Mando Mondays. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
there's no day in the week that starts with G.
Starts with a G. Yeah. I can tell we were both thinking that.
The fact that I had to ask is not great. I'm fat and fast here.
Oh dear. Well, I mean, you know, I've had I've had fun today. That's been probably the high spot of the last few months.
Yeah.
That episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Very fair call. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how good it was. Not that I thought it would be bad, you know.
Yeah.
It's Dave Filoni directing an episode that was most likely going to involve Ahsoka and possibly dive a little bit into sort of Jedi lore. So, you know, it was always going to be interesting at the very least. But it was incredible. It was everything I could possibly have wanted and more. This is, you know, this is the type of episode where, you know, going forward, like if Star Wars ever lets you down, Star Wars leaves you feeling a bit underwhelmed, there's a Star Wars movie you don't like or whatever, you know, this is the sort of episode to keep in mind because Star Wars can be this.
Yeah. Did you watch this with your girlfriend?
No, she has zero interest in Mandalorian. She wasn't home, so she might have humored me and watched it if she had been, but I don't know.
I watched it with my wife, and at the end I sort of said, do you know who Grand Admiral Thrawn is? And she didn't, but she didn't really care. You know, I use her as a sounding board for that kind of stuff. And obviously, you know, I've known who Grand Admiral Thrawn is since the 90s, and he's a big part of my Star Wars fandom, I suppose. I really dig that character, and it's pretty awesome to hear him mentioned in this show and you know where that might lead. It might lead to seeing a live action Thrawn, which would be fantastic.
That's the thing, like if just that alone, even if you took Ahsoka out of this episode, even if you took Grogu out of this episode, just the tease of Grand Admiral Thrawn would have people super hyped coming out of this episode.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I think Moff Gideon's a brilliant villain. And he's got the Darksaber and he's got the cool armor and he's got the, you know,
the
Gus Fring don't give a toss attitude. And he's got a cruiser and he's got special TIE fighters with foldy wings. He's a cool and Death Troopers. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
But I'd throw him away in a one shot to the head for Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Look, I can't get on board with that. I would never throw away Giancarlo Esposito, but
I love Giancarlo Esposito's acting, but Gideon, wear a helmet. Dude, it's a dangerous galaxy out there.
Do we want to indulge in some mindless speculation about who could possibly play Grand Admiral Thrawn? I mean, why not, you know?
Yeah, go on.
I don't know, but it's funny because
Pierce Brosnan.
Well, why not? I mean, he was voiced by what's Mads Mikkelsen's brother's name?
He was. He was voiced by Mikkelsen's Lars Mikkelsen.
Lars Mikkelsen.
Wasn't it Lars Mikkelsen? Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. He was voiced by Lars Mikkelsen in Rebels. I don't know if he's. Again, I mean, that might be a case of like not being a big enough name to pull into the live action series.
Mads could do it, though.
A great job. Sorry?
Mads could do it.
See, he can't. I was going to say that, but he can't because he's Galen Erso.
Of course. Well, he could be Blue Galen Erso.
Yeah.
You know? What ifs?
At some point,
the Marvel and Star Wars franchises are going to burn through every single actor out there and they're just going to have to start reusing deepfaking completely new people.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to throw one out there. I don't even know what I'm really basing. I mean, I've only seen him in one thing, but Claes Bang.
That's
how you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
I think he would be pretty good as Thrawn potentially. Because I think whoever it is, you have to be able to pull off that sort of air of like sophistication and being maybe, you know, one step ahead of everybody else. You know, he's got to feel sort of cultured and he's the smartest guy in the room, but also kind of evil.
How about a Christoph Waltz?
Don't even like that would be like, I mean, they couldn't get him, surely, but...
Oh, they can get anyone, man. They're Disney.
That's true. That's true. And it's like...
I mean, they can't pay people, but they can get anyone.
Hashtag Disney must pay. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be happy with either of those. I'd be thrilled with Christoph.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't think either of those are necessarily going to happen, but we don't know.
Oh, wow. It's so exciting. I mean, you know, I'd love it if we don't see hide nor hair of him in this show, but we see him in the Sabine Ahsoka spinoff.
I 100% think that's what's happening. Hey, like I think this show is pretty set with Moff Gideon as the villain for now.
Yeah.
And Thrawn, obviously, you know, he doesn't really have any sort of connection to the Mando. I mean, not that he needs to, they could create one, but I have a feeling that line was in there specifically to set up the Ahsoka spinoff. Yeah. I mean, what did you think that even just that first moment in the show when, because it seemed like, you know, Ahsoka was out to get the magistrate. And then when you realize like she doesn't even care about the magistrate, she wants the magistrate's master.
Yeah.
Did your mind immediately start racing to like, you know, who that could be?
I guess it did for a few seconds, and then I just got carried away again, just swept away by the episode, you know?
Same. I had like 5 seconds of like, who could that be? Who's still alive at this point? I'm like, no, not that guy. Oh, whatever. I'm just going with the
movie. And I was trying to think of the magistrate as, is this a character we've seen before, you know? Is in the comics maybe, or something, but obviously not. But
I don't think so, because I remember I did throw the character's name when I could remember it into Google, and it didn't sort of come back with anything. So
yeah, it's new.
Anyway,
that's I'm happy. I'm just happy.
I'm so pumped. If we never got another episode of The Mandalorian, I'd be stoked with what we got in that episode. Oh, one quick thing we should mention: how great / heartbreaking were just those few seconds where Mando thought that he would actually be giving up baby Grogu, and you know, just the second that shot of him sort of lying in the hammock with and holding Grogu, and
yeah,
it just, I mean, that was that moment, you know, talk about it, you know, every frame of painting or whatever. I mean, that shot was incredible. I would gladly hang that. I mean, I wouldn't, but you know, it was a great shot.
Yeah. That's why I think he'll never give him up. He can't part from him. It's just too, yeah.
But I mean, don't you think in this episode, if Ahsoka had been up for it, like, what would he have done? He would have been like, I know I said I wanted you to take him, but don't.
I do. I think it's, you know, it was all revealed in the fact that, you know, he took the ball from him. And I was like, at that point, I was like, he grabbed the ball from him. That's, the deal is sealed now. That's, they're together.
So, I mean, I guess you could say that this, They don't have to do the whole, you know, choosing between the ball and the lightsaber or whatever later on, because he's essentially done that. Like he already chose the ball in this episode, you could say.
Well, I mean, the next time Mando yells at him for eating something he shouldn't, then you know, we're back to square one again. You know, I know what toddlers are like, so yeah. He'll probably be climbing the walls to get rid of him after a long trip to the core.
Alrighty, well that just about does us. That is The Mandalorian chapter 13, The Jedi. What an episode, what a show. Dave Filoni, what a man. Yes, golf clap for Dave Filoni. If you want to tell us what you thought of the show, feel free to hit us up. We are at Force Material on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can drop us a line at forcematerial@gmail.com. Feel free to throw us a casual 5-star review. We'll be back, obviously, next week to review The Mandalorian Chapter 14. As we record this, I have no idea what that episode is called or who's directing it or what it's about, and I hope it stays that way until we get to see it. We should have a pretty cool guest for that one, but, I mean, you know, the best laid plans, et cetera. So this time around, I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to say anything until until we've recorded it and it's in the bag.
Yeah. We got wall to wall pretty cool guests for the rest of the way.
Exactly. I'm Rowan Williams.
I'm Baz McAllister.
And you've just taken your first step into a larger world.